I'm just going to start off hot. Or you're going to start off hot.
This is vamping. This is what you're doing.
This is not vamping. I'm trying to get to it.
Talk faster.
The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and is brought to you by Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process, as well as Stateside Vodka, the official sponsor of the Corner 3 newsletter with Zoe. Get the vodka at statesidevodka.com. On the show today, Mike comes in hot. We rank the Sixers by trade value alone. And thank you for listening to us, according to Spotify. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef. Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with Mike Levitt. I don't know. Go, start.
They're so fucking slow. They're the slowest team that I've ever seen in basketball. I think maybe since like the late 90s. It is remarkable.
Yeah.
It is remarkable for a team to be this slow in this modern era. Like, it's okay if you have one guy that's like a change of pace guy. You got one Kyle Anderson here or there. But there's like 19 Kyle Andersons on this team. It's Tyrese Maxey, Matisse, who shouldn't touch the ball on offense, and then 19 Kyle Anderson's just like holding it, except Kyle Anderson's a good passer and none of these guys are good passers. It's just insane. It is so remarkable. Every play is end of shot clock because they're just so fucking slow with the ball. They can't make quick decisions. They can't get into their sets fast. They get bumped out of their spots so quick. How can they be both slow and also small and physically weak? Like, there's one guy that's not slow, Maxey. There's one guy that's not physically weak, Embiid, and even he gets bumped out of the post very often. And we're just like, they're waiting around, they're holding the ball, they're telegraphing a nothing pass 30 freaking feet from the basket. No one can pass. Guys are open because they're leaving other guys open because they know they won't shoot quick enough. It's just bad. It's really, really bad. There's so many weak spots on this team, like weaknesses. Like, the game starts and Seth Curry is covering Jaylen Brown. That's what we're doing. It's like, this team, I think Doc makes a ton of bad decisions, but this team is poorly constructed at this point. And like, they have a bunch of guys who can do stuff. They're not bad players, but because there are so many of them that can't do so many things, they are exposed over and over again for how poorly they are built to succeed. Like, Shake was playing great. Shake had an incredible first quarter, the only reason they were in this game. And he got 22 minutes. He didn't play. Yeah, he barely played.
He wasn't there in the fourth quarter. In the fourth, yeah.
I just really, really, really don't understand so many things. And it's just like, it's time. Look, I started the season very negative about the team without Ben, without a trade. It was just like, look, let's just have fun. Let's get the young guys involved. Let's see how much Maxey improves, other guys, whatever. And then they won some games and it was like, they're actually fun. And then Embiid went out with COVID and it was like, they're still like competitive in games and that's fun.
And Maxey was doing his thing.
And Maxey was doing great, obviously. But like, we got to like wrap our heads around the fact that the season doesn't fucking matter. And they're just not good. They just don't have enough good players. They don't have enough players that can do enough stuff. It's just remarkable how like easily they get into like helpless situations. Even the last play of the game, Al Horford blitzing Tobias.
Yeah.
Al Horford is blitzing Tobias because he knows he's slow as fucking shit. He's like, he's not going to be able to get around me. In 6 seconds, he can't get around me. And that's insane. And it's just so much of that. There's so many of those kinds of players on this team. I don't know why they don't have anyone with speed whatsoever. And they have depth. They have plenty of slow guys that can like do some stuff if you give them enough time and like turn off the shot clock for an hour at a time. And I don't think that's all a Doc thing either, right?
Like, no,
Doc is
not.
Constantly being like, go faster, go faster, go faster. But, and I think, so I think some of these guys, this is just how they play. Seth, that's how they play. Tobias is definitely how he plays. I think Maxey is still sometimes gets a little bit just like jarred by like what his job is. And he's young and he's going to make mistakes and he's going to like take some time to settle in, especially now with Embiid there. Like that's something we could talk about. Like they're not quite meshing yet. The Maxey style offense with an Embiid style, everyone stands there. And it's just like, but it's also the sets that Doc has them running are like, it's either Embiid in the post, everyone stands there, or it's 16 dribble handoffs at the same point at the top of the key. And then once eventually the defense gets tired and they get a look out of it, but that can't last a whole game. It's just like, they're a slow team. They make slow decisions. They have slow offense. Everything is really, really, really bleak. It didn't matter if they won this game or not. Like I didn't care. That Danny three that he hit, by the way, 100% chance of going in. There was not a doubt in my mind that thing wasn't going in. Jaylen Brown was right in his face.
Yeah.
Embiid passes up an open look. Another thing that this team always does. Everyone has it.
Tobias passed up a sort of open look too,
all the time. Yeah. All the time. So, and it's just, it's bad and it's bleak and the season sucks. It was fun for a little bit and it's
CJ,
not really fun anymore.
See, I think that was the title of the pod. Just when you put it up there, what was it? It's bad, whatever it is. The thing you mentioned about Doc Rivers in the middle of your thing being that he makes a lot of mistakes, but it does remind me, I think Brett Brown is a better coach than Doc Rivers. I want to get it out there. Not a Doc Rivers guy. But, however, one of the things I used to say all the time with Brett Brown, when somebody say, why do you have this guy in? Or why do you have this guy doing this? One of my responses was always like, okay, well then who would you put in that guy? Who would you put in his place? And then who do you put in that guy's place? Like, it's a jigsaw puzzle where you're moving things around, but if you move something around, the other thing has to go in there, and there's just not enough things to do what you want it to do. And to your point, they're all the slowness, as slow as they've been all year, tonight was the slowest.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, can I just say, that was one of the worst Sixers games in years, especially one that they had a chance to win at the end. Like
because Boston's
an enormous waste of time.
Yeah, the Celtics aren't that good. Like they also are a team that doesn't pass well, that doesn't move well, that is poorly communicating and all that stuff. But like Tobias, 4 of 11, no free throws, 8 points. Embiid, 3 of 17, inexplicably. Like sometimes, like he's obviously lowered his turnover percentage. He didn't turn the ball over tonight. But there's a difference between not turning the ball over when you get double teamed and like actually making a helpful pass. And he so often does not make helpful passes. And it's just like, bro, you got to be better at this by now. You have to. You absolutely have to be better at this by now. There's got to be someone, some assistant coach with Doc and Embiid that like gets together and like decides how we're going to tackle this, because it hasn't improved. And I don't know, it's on Embiid to get better. Obviously, he just didn't have it tonight. He's 3 of 17. I thought he rebounded really well. I thought he defended around the rim really, really well. But
especially
other than that,
in the game, I thought his defense was good. Yeah.
Yeah. He gets caught in old man's land sometimes because he's trying to do too much and he's just not that fast anymore when he's not like fully going his hardest. And he can get exposed, like, you know, lobs behind him, guys walking into open pull ups in front of him if the guard doesn't get around the pick. It's just easy stuff that we've seen a million times. But like, he's got to be able to score on the other end. And he's just taking like fadeaways, he's taking leaners, he's getting contact sometimes, but like there's nothing right now offensively that he's good enough at to carry this team out of the first round, and he just has to be better. And I know he's like coming back from COVID, but like it's bad.
Well,
it's
had bad games like this before, like
totally, and especially against Boston. Like they're a rival, whatever, it doesn't matter. Maybe he doesn't care, maybe it's a coincidence, whatever the fuck, but like 3 of 17, like we know Al Horford, he's not that good. Like he does what he does, but like he can.
And it wasn't just beating Horford. It wasn't just Horford. It was Kander.
Totally. Kander. He's going at Kander in the post when like everybody fucking knows that the way to beat Enes Kanter is make him to defend in the paint on the perimeter, make him defend in space, make him move his feet, make him make choices, make him think quickly. And when he can just stand there and be big and just like absorb contact, that's not hard. That's not challenging to him.
I wonder sometimes. I don't feel like talking about the situation, but I wonder sometimes as we sit here thinking wow, what are we even doing here this season? Like, this season's going nowhere if they don't all look around at each other. Not that they're not trying, but like, especially the guys that have been here, you know, obviously Tyrese Maxey's fucking thrilled and having a good time. But I wonder if Embiid or Harris, or they all look around, they go, what the fuck are we even doing here?
No, year? I don't think that. I think they believe in themselves. I think they, and they've had a good time for most of the year. And they were fighting without Embiid. And I think, you know, they won that Portland game. Like, there's spirit to this team. I think George Niang has brought a lot, just of like, he's just a helpful player. He'd be more helpful if there were other guys faster than him. He's probably like the fourth fastest guy on this team. And he's so angry, which I like. He has such a delicate game, such a soft touch for to be such an angry person. Like, they missed shots tonight. Like, he's not going to go for 5 from 3.
No.
There's plenty of guys.
Tonight was not about missing shots.
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't. The result of this game didn't matter. It was, you're watching the game and you're like, this team isn't good. Like, they're just not good enough. They don't make quick decisions. They don't move the ball. They aren't smart. They don't have like a set offense that they're like, this is their bread and butter. Sometimes Seth and Embiid can get into a nice rhythm, but like, they're just too slow. They're just too slow. And like, I'm looking around at the league to be like, because Isaiah Joe should be getting minutes. When Grant Riller is healthy, he should be getting some minutes, just because they don't have any other guys that can handle the ball really. And everyone else is slow. And you're looking around the league and like, well, who can they get? Like, Jeremy Lamb is a scorer, but like, he's not that fast in that permit. Like, Terrence Ross, Corey Joseph does absolutely nothing for me. Like, there's just not that many guys.
Well, Corey Joseph's like a slow price too. Range.
Totally. Yeah. For the price range, like, who are you going to get? Eric Gordon's too expensive and also probably washed. Like, there's just not that many exciting, like, this person will help. Like, if you package two guys together and went and got Terrence Ross, like, they'd probably be a better team. They'd probably be a little bit better. He's got some athleticism, at least. He probably would, you know, try harder than he has in a couple years for a very nowhere Orlando franchise. But like, I don't know. It's going to come down. Like, I can get mad about a lot of things. I think Daryl can better set these guys up to succeed. I think Doc can better set these guys up to succeed. But if Embiid's shooting 3 for fucking 17 and like acting confused around any double team, then when it happens every fucking time and you can't make them pay for that, whether that's a lob to Matisse or just like a quick swing to somebody who's ready to shoot it in the right place, not just like at their shoelaces. It's just too much of the same. And guys, you know, aren't getting better enough. They aren't getting, this team is, there is continuity on this team. Like, a lot of these guys have played with each other 4 years. This is Doc's second year. Like, they should be feeling good. And yeah, without Simmons, like, they're weak in a bunch of areas for sure. But like, he obviously carried his own problems with him. You can't blame it all on that. Like, there's just a lot of things that they're just not good enough at. And it's frustrating. Like, you miss shots, but individually it's frustrating to see them fail to do the easy stuff, fail to like look cohesive and just like be assembled. You look around and be like, everyone is so fucking slow. And when Maxey didn't have it, he didn't have it tonight. It was probably his worst game of the season. Like, you just have nowhere to go with it. You have nowhere to go with it. And the team is not good.
And the thing about Max, and Maxey hasn't looked particularly good since Embiid came back. But on top of that, he was probably shooting above his head. And he was, like, in the games that he was playing well, or he was scoring a lot and all those things, like, they weren't winning most of those games. That's going to have to be something that you were saying earlier, they haven't figured out how to play together yet. Like, even Maxey last year, when he was the only guy on the court that could do anything, scored points and stuff, you know, like, it's a completely different thing to go out and score a bunch of points when the team doesn't have any chance of winning, or they're not going to win a lot of games. This is a whole other thing. And to your larger overall point, the whole season, just most likely because of the situation that is clouding the whole thing, the whole season just feels like a fucking waste at this point. It just feels like maybe a couple of guys get better but you know, the idea of that trade not happening this season is terrifying. Really is, to just throw a season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, to me, it doesn't matter when the trade happens, because if they trade him for another, like, slow guy who's not going to make a difference.
Well,
then we're going to be right back here.
You would hope they trade him for a guy that makes.
Well, if the trade's not there, then they're going to trade him for somebody that's not as good as the guy they want to get out of it. And so it's just like, I don't know. I don't fucking know. I mean, you think about like this team. We don't need to talk about the two other games, the Magic game and the Wolves game, but when any team throws a zone at them, it's just like it takes them a month to decide to like diagnose it and make them pay. It's like, this is NBA basketball. And the one thing they have is shooters. Like they have a lot of guys who can shoot. Like unlike in previous years, they have a lot of guys that can do this, but they don't have guys that make quick decisions that get the ball in the right place at the right time. I mean, sometimes, but like not often enough are they just like making people pay for stuff. And it's just like, it is so frustrating to watch. It's really, really frustrating to watch.
Here's the thing about the Timberwolves game. If you take Embiid and Towns and put them to the side, which team would you rather have?
I like the Wolves. I have liked the Wolves. Anthony Edwards is certainly the best prospect out of either team at this point.
Yeah.
So I would probably, without assuming Ben is also not in the picture, I would take the Wolves for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a, like, you know,
they're not a perfect team. Like, I don't think the Wolves.
No. I'm not saying they're great.
Supporting cast is certainly flawed, but like, I think right now, like, the Sixers have a bunch of guys that I like, obviously. And if you told me, like, all right, make a trade, go trade some of these guys, I would feel conflicted because I do like a lot of them.
You get attached to everybody.
You get attached to them. Of course you do. But, like, they are clearly lacking guys who can put pressure on the rim and beat guys off the dribble. Like, Korkmaz has had a up and down year, but, like, we've seen his ability to be a secondary creator a little bit. He has some passing chops. He has some handling chops. He's gotten better at like finishing at the rim of using his body and length and stuff. And he's out of the rotation now because he hasn't been hitting shots. He's slow. And they can't have that many slow people in the fucking rotation. Like, we need the main guys, ball handlers, passers, creators, so that the secondary guys that can do a little bit, George Niang, Shake, Korkmaz, can then do their thing and be like, oh, what a nice added bonus. They're not James Ennis. It's not just he's standing there. Danny has the James Ennis don't dribble. But the other guys, you're like, you can do a little bit. But when they're the main guy, then they're getting outplayed because that's not their strength. They shouldn't have to be doing that. Korkmaz needs to be shooting 7 threes a game. And when he's handling running pick and roll, like trying to get the guys involved, like he can't do that. And that's now he's out of the rotation because it's like, oh, he's not good enough to do this other thing. But it's like, let him do the main thing he's good at. Or bring Isaiah Joe in to do that stuff. It's frustrating. It seems like there hasn't been nearly enough. You know, when Daryl got here, it was like, okay, great. We had Elton was sort of like creativity shooting from the hip, like chaos. And he was taking chances and he took swings and like, you got to give him credit for that. And Daryl was like, okay, now it's going to be more like controlled with a main goal in mind. And I think that's why he has the stones to like wait on a Simmons trade, which I respect, but like the 2020 draft took the guys that came to him. It was a good draft, but just like took the guys that came that fell to him at those positions and made nice picks, and then signed minimum Dwight Howard, and then waited, and then George Hill, who was helpless.
Well,
and
he also went away. I mean, he acquired Seth Curry. He acquired.
Yes. The draft. I included that all in the draft. Yeah. Yes. The draft night trade of like Josh for Seth made sense.
Yeah.
Al Horford for Danny made sense. Like making sense helped and was good. But I'm looking for that elevating thing. If Daryl's one of the best GMs in the league, one of the most creative GMs in the league, like let's see it.
Well,
and thus far, like it's just they have a bunch of good players. And last season, they could have gotten closer than they did. They came up flat at the deadline, came up flat in the second round of the playoffs. And this offseason, you're waiting on Ben. Like, he's certainly got plenty of excuses. There's certainly, like, reasons you can point to. But, like, at the end of the day, he came here with a lot of really good players, has made a bunch of good picks. But, like, I need to see it. Like, I need All to right. see it, like, the capability that this – of, like, I'm going to go get the guy or some guys that are really going to elevate this team in this way or that. And maybe that means trading Tobias. Maybe that means – like packaging a bunch of picks and the young guys together into something else. I need to see it. Like, because Joel's not going to be healthy forever. He's a flawed star. Like, he has weaknesses, and sometimes he has games like this. And even in games like this, he's still excellent defensively. He's still carrying them on the defensive end.
Well, he's also never been healthy at the end of any playoff
for sure.
In history.
The one time he was healthy was when Ben was out for the whole playoffs. And it's just there's too much. I need to see it. Like, I'm just getting, maybe this season just a wash, and we should just like start talking about, like, I don't know, friggin' nature.
All right.
We can go there, but I don't want to waste Joel's prime because he is good enough to eventually be that guy, although he is obviously fucking a lot to improve on.
I want to offer a defense of Daryl in 1 second. So the Philadelphia Union are playing in the Eastern Conference Finals on Sunday. And I went to DraftKings Sportsbook. I looked in the app and I was like, they don't have a bet on this. And I was like, you guys got to do something about this. And they're going to. It was amazing. They actually listened to me. So on Saturday, there's going to be an odds boost for the Union match, which is awesome because the Union actually like playing well. They're playing New York on Sunday. So they're going to have an odds boost on Sunday. Also on Sunday, or Saturday for Sunday's game, also on Sunday, know you love the NFL. So the official sports betting partner of the NFL, DraftKings Sportsbook, is going to give you you're going to get a win just if there's 1 point scored. So if you're a new customer, you bet $1 on any team to score any points, you win $100 in free bets. Think about that. And if it's not available in your state yet, you know, betting's not available, mobile betting's not available in every state, you can still get in on the action. Huge cash prizes in DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. That's how we got to know DraftKings. Any new customer gets a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit in the DraftKings Daily Fantasy. So there's Sportsbook, where you get the 1 for 100. There's Daily Fantasy, where you get a shot at millions of bucks in total cash prizes. And on Saturday, there's going to be an odds boost for the Union. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code RTRS. Bet $1 on any team to score and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code RTRS this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older. New Jersey, Indiana, or PA only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. 1 per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Do you remember when Sam Hinkie was on Pablo Torre's podcast to actually like talk about basketball a little bit? Most of the time he talked about like what he wanted to do and why he was never going to work in basketball again. But do you remember that? It was like, I don't know, 2 years ago he was on Pablo Torre. It was right after they hired Daryl.
Yeah, of course.
And Pablo Torre asked him, do you think Daryl can succeed or whatever? And Hinkie was very clear. And he said, like, if you give him enough time to do it, like if you're patient. Now, that's a very Hinkie thing to say. But I remember
he didn't get enough time to do it.
Right. But at the time, we made note of it that like maybe we're looking too much into it, but maybe, you know, maybe they're a little bit further away than we thought for one reason or another. And all I would say in a defense of Daryl, because my biggest criticism of Daryl is that regardless of how James Harden looks this year, he fucked up by not going all the way to trade for Harden. That was a mistake. Blew it. Okay, whatever. All that said, he did come in here and with the minor moves he made, they were the one seed. They weren't good enough to win the championship, but they were the one seed.
Yeah.
The year he came in here. And I think you have to say, though, you know, I could go back and go, oh, I could see this Ben Simmons thing happening the whole time. I could never see that happening. And this whole fucking disaster. And he is, as the saying goes, in a little bit between the rock and a hard place. And I know you're saying he's got to show me something, da 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 da. But when you look at the team and the assets, he just might only have one real move in him. And I really think part of the reason he hasn't made that trade yet is at least, and we'll get into the trade value thing, like Tobias has negative value on his contract. So if you're making a big trade and you're including Tobias, you're paying to get rid of Tobias too. So that the price on that trade is even higher because you're paying to get rid of that contract. At least the other big contract on the team, for the team that trades for him, you at least think is neutral or positive value. And when you're trading for a star, that $40 million is like something, you know? Like, he's sort of fucking stuck right now, man. You panic, and I don't want to watch games like this any more than anybody does. I'm sitting there going, like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? I'm in my mid-40s. I got a great job. I'm married. My wife is pretty. I'm sitting here watching this fucking ridiculous game again and again and again and again and again. Like, what the fuck am I doing? I would love for him to make a trade just so I'm not watching this dog shit. I'd rather they tank than this. But all that said, he's sort of stuck, man. Like, he's sort of stuck until somebody becomes available, because he might only have one trade in him. Like, this team, asset-wise, might only have one trade in it, one meaningful trade. Well,
certainly one big trade. That's why I'm not in. I was before, just because I'm an emotional person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine to wait for the right trade with Simmons. I don't think that they should try to get him to play, because it's, I think that ship has sailed, and there hasn't been any updates about that in a couple of weeks. So maybe we're beyond it.
Yeah. I think that was a little bit of show from everybody, you know, part of that. But yeah,
because of the league, you mean? Like,
yeah, I think part of the John Wall thing is that too. They're just like, hey, everybody act like you're trying to make something happen for a minute, and then everybody can shut up for a couple of weeks. And I think it's part of it. They're just
sure. You know, so. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a Ben trade if you want to trade him for like CJ McCollum right now. And then there's the Tobias and stuff for another max level player trade if you wanted to do it. I think that there's a bunch of good young prospects that teams would like to have. The Tobias negative trade value thing is like, I think when you get to contracts at that level that are that much money, unless you're trading him for another guy like that, like, they're just going to have to stack contracts against it. And so, like, you're not trading Tobias just to get more depth. Like, that doesn't help. But if you can trade him for the right guy and then you attach picks to Tobias for that guy, then fine. You're not trading. It's not like an $18 million contract where you're like, okay, just give us two expirings and we'll throw a bunch of firsts at it just to get him out of here, just to clear the books, which might happen with like an Eric Gordon or something. Tobias is making a fuckload of money. And so, like, there's no contract in the league aside from another person that's like Tobias that you're like, okay, this makes sense. It's beyond the like tradable contract. Only untradable contracts can be traded for untradable contracts at this point. And I don't think Tobias had a dog shit game. He frustrates me so much. But I like him more than you like him. And I'm constantly frustrated by him. I think in the right situation with a team that had other people to do other things, although like it's hard to say like Tobias and his 40 million like deserve a better situation than playing with Embiid and making that much money. But like a faster team would not have the damage, would not hurt you as much with what Tobias gives you. A faster team with better decision makers and better passers and more creativity would be able to get past his shortcomings. But because of there's so many players on this team like that, they are just doubly compromised and they're just snowballing on each other to make it really significantly worse.
Do you think there's really any NBA team, and I say this honestly, and I'm not going to say Jay Crowder because that's the name I say all. If you're a team competing for a championship, what team would rather have Tobias Harris than Danny Green? I bet almost none.
I think most of them. For the contracts, maybe not, but for most.
But the contract's part of it. The contract's part
of it. Sure. Yeah. No, I think he's significantly overpaid for sure. The idea that Malcolm Brogdon is getting as much money as he is, which was like 470 or something like that, or some 480, something like that. And Tobias got a full max. Is wild. Like, that shouldn't have been the case. And good for Tobias's dad for negotiating a hell of a contract, and bad for the Sixers for giving it to him. But when they let Jimmy go, basically, and traded all that stuff for Tobias, he knew that they had him in a corner. And it's like, either you're signing my kid to the fucking biggest contract of all time, or you're giving all that stuff away for nothing. And so they decided to double down, and here we are. But I think if you had Tobias for 25 a year, then I think we'd be in a different, it'd be a different situation.
No, I think he's an 11, a 10 or $11 million a year player. Honestly, I he is at his position. He doesn't do what you need him to do. He just doesn't. He's a very hard player to talk about because he is a skilled basketball player, right? He can, like when you watch him at his best, he's clearly skilled. But I just can't think of what team would fucking want him. Like, I'd rather have, like, I barely watched the Hawks this year. But whatever fucking version of Gallinari, I'd rather fucking have Gallinari. At least he can shoot every time, you know? What team that is competing for a championship is going to throw it out to him on the perimeter and watch him pump fake a wide open three and dribble into a 17 footer and not put him right on the fucking bench?
Like, sure. There's four guys in this team that do that.
Right. I'm just saying, I just can't imagine any team wanting him. I'd have to be honest. Like, maybe a team that...
Sure. I mean, the Sixers were certainly negotiating with themselves at that.
Yes.
That situation.
So, trade value. rather than obliterate the team every time, or, I think we talked about Maxey for six straight pods. It was nice. I emailed Mike and CJ today, and I was like, what if we did, like, a trade value ranking? Because I thought it might be interesting of who is the most versus the least valuable in a trade for the Sixers. And we'll make this sponsored by Stateside Vodka, the official sponsor of the Corner 3 newsletter with Zoe. Sign up at writesrickysanchez.com/newsletter. You get the Stateside at statesidevodka.com. Also, they have single flavor vodka soda cases now that you can order. And I think their Cyber Monday deal is still up there. Two of the 1.75 liter Statesides for $78.99. Anyway, statesidevodka.com. So I have my list. Did you do your trade value rankings? Or you just want to hear mine and say that it's wrong?
Whatever. I can whip it up.
Yeah.
I got it right here.
why do I even do it? All right. Okay, so one is Embiid.
Sure.
Correct, right? Two is Maxey.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So here's where, obviously, so... Number three on my list, I have Seth Curry.
I think that's probably right for a lot of teams. The other guy I would have there, not that he's their third best player, but I would say Matisse.
You would have Matisse as number three.
I think it's close. I think it's pretty close. Seth, man, I mean, like, he had some really good shots tonight. He had a bunch of nice plays.
Rim. Two with like a minute left or whatever it was a killer. You know,
yeah.
It was a great
really
shot.
Nice floaters here and there, distributed a little bit, but like he played 36 minutes. He took three threes.
Yeah.
The second best 3-point shooter of all time took three fucking threes because he's too small and too fucking slow. And it's just like, and you can't really put him anywhere defensively. He had a couple of nice defensive plays today, but also had to like have a bunch. He had five fouls today because of so many take fouls because guys just get by him so easily. And he gets so mismatched so easily. I find it really hard. Like, look, if Seth was like your sixth man, if he was like a Lou Williams situation on someone else's team, like he's too good probably to be a sixth man. He's too elite of a shooter to be just a sixth man. But like, he's also too weak at so many other things.
Yeah.
His contract's great. But like, yeah. So I would say, depending on the team you're trading him to a team that's trying to win now, maybe they say Seth. To a team that needs that, I think other teams would say Matisse because of, you know, how otherworldly he is defensively.
Yeah. I will say though, Matisse is what, 25, and he still looks basically unplayable offensively. Like,
yeah, I like that he kept shooting. Unplayable. I like that he kept shooting. They were just playing off him. And so I think that's a good, you know, for the future, some future when playoff games are going to matter. I like that he kept shooting and hit his last one in the corner. That was nice. He's just got to be better. He's got to be better. Like I saw something I talk about Matisse's passing a lot, like where I think I see something there, but I think he also sees something there. Like he also thinks he's got a little Drummond in him where he thinks he can make some of those passes. And it's just like, dude, like just make normal passes. Like don't jump and turn around. Don't try to like do a jump pass from like 30 feet away. And it's just like, It's inexplicable. It's not that they have like a ton of turnover problems. They had 7 turnovers in this game. Like it's, that wasn't the issue, but like you just need guys that can do, that have like heady basketball IQ and can like make the quick decision. And he too often isn't that. Even if he's like, I'm fine with him taking 5 threes per game. And I think more often than not, if they're wide open, he's going to hit a couple of them. But like, aside from finishing in transition, he just hasn't gotten better at anything this year. And I just like, I need him to.
So I have 3 at Seth. My 3, 4, 5 are Seth, 25, and then Thybul. So you have maybe have Thybul at 3.
It's just, I don't know where you rank Ben. I think like, obviously if a team wanted that, if the team wanted Ben, they would trade more than they would trade for Seth or Matisse, but it's also, you're going to have to package salary together, which makes it harder. So I would say, all right, let's say Ben would probably be 3. Cause you could see a team just like packaging a bunch of picks and you wouldn't do that for Seth.
And then you would have Thybul and Curry.
Yeah.
Okay. CJ, you might
agree with you that Matisse is too old to be like, if his offense comes along, like he just has to get better. It's just, we can't be waiting around anymore.
We might have to get some assistance for the Thomas Bryant guy in the YouTube chat. He comes in every time, just so upset all the time. Just commenting. I feel bad for the guy. I feel like he should watch a different pod. Number 6, I have Danny Green.
Yeah.
Number 7, I have Furkan Korkmaz.
I'd probably say Shake over Korkmaz.
Okay.
Still a really good contract. Both of them are on great contracts. Korkmaz has improved defensively, but
I feel like you could throw Cork in on more teams than you could throw Shake in on.
I think Shake profiles as the better defender. He's longer. He can handle the ball a little better, gets the line a little bit more, can create his own shot more. But like, they both have their moments. They're weirdly, even as different as they are, they're weirdly similar players. And I would probably say Shake because you probably think he has more one-on-one skill to him.
So
and defense.
Basically 7, 8, 9, 10. I had Furk, Isaiah Joe, Niang, and then I had Shake.
I feel like Jaden Springer is probably in there.
I have somewhere him at 12, just Bassey and then Springer.
I think Springer's probably higher than, say yours again, 7, 8, 9.
So 7 through 12, I guess. I have Furk, Joe, Niang, Milton, Bassey, Springer.
I'd probably put Springer over Niang and Bassey. And then they're all pretty much the same at that point with B-ball Paul and everything. But Isaiah Joe, I think, could do exactly what became of Landry Shamet in the Tobias trade.
And then I have B-ball Paul, Andre Drummond, and coming at number 15 is Tobias Harris. Well, I mean, right?
Could you get like a lottery protected first for Isaiah Joe? Probably, maybe. I think from a couple teams, you probably could. From most teams, you probably couldn't. But from a couple teams, they'd be like, great, he's second year, he tries, he has a little offense.
Like you're paying to get rid of. Yeah, you're
paying. It's just such a different package of things.
Yeah, but that's what trade value is.
It's hard to say exactly. I believe pretty strongly that there are more teams that would like Tobias on their team than you do. Now,
but that's not what trade value is.
Is it easy to get him on their teams?
Right.
Probably not. But it's just weird because of how much you have to make contracts match. So guys with smaller little contracts are easier to match with.
Before we get to the hard to stomach YouTube comment of the week and a couple of mailbag questions, talk about our sponsor, Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of the process. I'm thinking about why can I never think of what the fucking word is when a bunch of people sue one person?
Class action.
Never. Never, 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 never. How many times have I threatened a class action lawsuit against the Sixers for us having to watch these games? How many times? Thousands of times. How many times has Kornblau reached out to me about actually making this suit happen? None. Maybe he's not as good as I say he is. Kornblau and Kornblau is the official law firm of the process. because I trust Adam Kornblau. That's basically what it comes down to. When he wanted to advertise on the Ricky, I was like, let me sit down with this guy. I went to Jenkintown. We sat at some bar and we talked for a while. I said, this guy's the real deal. And one of the things that impressed me about him, he and his mom run Kornblau and Kornblau. His parents started it 40 years ago, the premier boutique personal injury law firm in the Delaware Valley. But one of the things that struck me about him is how much he cared, like how much he wanted to be good at it and be good for his clients, and how hard he knows it is for his clients to sit through this. Personal injury lawsuit sucks. It truly sucks. So you need somebody to really take you through it who you can trust. And Kornblau and Kornblau is it. That's it. They have some of the biggest medical malpractice results in southeastern PA. You don't even need to go to the office. He'll come to you. And most important, we say when you call Kornblau and Kornblau, you get a Kornblau. What that means is most of these personal injury law firms you see, when you see a billboard, you hear a radio ad, whatever, they're just, you're not really getting the law firm. They're just going to ship you off to somebody else. They're just referral services, but not Kornblau and Kornblau. If you think you might have a case, give him a call or shoot him an email, injured anyway. He's helped a bunch of our listeners with different legal issues too. Any legal issue, 215-576-7200. Ask for Adam. Email kornblau@kornblauandkornblau.com. Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process. The hard to stomach YouTube comment of the week comes from Extroniter. Spike open up deadpanning for a pay cut for his producer. Hot take. Spike is the funny one. What do you think? It's a pretty hot take.
It's pretty hot.
Yeah. Two leftover AMA questions that we didn't get to from Twitter. This comes from Watching Hoops 13. Do you guys cook? What is the best dish that you make? I had no idea whether you're a cooker.
Alyssa does most of the cooking because she hates the dishes. And I'm not that good, especially dinner. I'm good at cooking vegetables and I'm good at cooking breakfast. Okay. But Alyssa, I'm not great at following directions, I'll say. Like a recipe.
A lot of cooking is really just following the directions.
Yeah, I'm bad at that. Bad at that.
The thing I did hate about cooking is I would find a recipe that I would like, and I'd be like, oh my God, there's like 16 ingredients, and I wouldn't feel like getting them all. Since becoming vegan, I've become a worse cook, way worse, because I just don't care anymore. I just want to eat and make it done already. A lot of vegans, like, get real creative. I don't. For dinner tonight, I put broccoli and mushrooms in a pan and I cooked it up. And then I cooked up a veggie burger and cut it up over the broccoli and put hot sauce on it. That's all I fucking care about anymore, is just not being hungry. So I used to be good at it. I'd make a fucking killer omelet. And I made this, I will say this, it is vegan. I do make a excellent fettuccine Alfredo with no dairy products, only avocado, lemon, salt, and pepper. And from Angelo, what is your guilty pleasure movie? Do you have one?
I don't have a guilt. I mean, I think you can like the movies that you like, because the people,
yeah.
I don't think it should be classified as that. I think that you can proudly like the movies you like, because a lot of people are pretending about movies that they actually like.
Yes.
And have some things that you think would think are a guilty pleasure, would think were not a guilty pleasure, other people would assume, like, you should feel guilty for liking that movie so much. So just like the movies you like. I love, unabashedly, Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again. Here We Go Again.
Now I loved
in my head.
My brother and I loved Biodome. I still love Biodome. Neither of these are guilty pleasures, and they just so happen to be animal names, movies that I watched last week. Have you seen Pig with Nick Cage or Lamb, the A24 movie?
No, not yet. But Pig is on the list.
Pig is fucking awesome. I cried during it a little bit. You watch the preview and you're like, this is a movie about Nick Cage, like sort of like going to find his pig or whatever. Nick Cage with a big beard. It is touching. It's a good movie. An amazing performance from Nick Cage. I love Pig. Lamb is really fucking weird. I did enjoy it. I don't know what the lesson was supposed to be, but I thought it was, I enjoyed watching it. It was very strange. So
the Sixers are my guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
This team.
Is it a pleasure? It's not even a pleasure.
It's a lot of more guilt.
Guilt. Yeah.
I want to shout out before you keep going. I wanted to, yeah. There was a quote from Doc that it was in one of the, either Newbeck or Bodner or Rich wrote about it, where he said, we have the one thing that probably only four teams have, where you're not going to want to switch much with Embiid in the action. The whole league switches. Sixers don't fucking switch. When a point guard comes off Joel, you're not going to put the point guard. You're not going to put the point guard on Joel. With Tyrese's speed, it becomes a factor. And inherently that makes sense. Like, Joel is hard to switch against because he could punish mismatches in the post. But how often do you see this team struggle to get the ball to Joel against a mismatch?
Every time.
In this game, he's working to get position. They're not getting the ball. He's fighting with Schroeder and Jaylen Brown and whoever to just like get position. And it's like Seth holding the ball up here, Tobias holding the ball up here, thinking about it, swinging the ball around. And it's just like, God, how's that? How is it so hard for them to do that? If that's the main offense, if that's like, hey, this is our superpower, then be good at your superpower. Like that, if that's it, like have the, if you have a finishing move,
you got to have one like guy who can throw an entry.
You got to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating that they struggle to do those kinds of things. I also wanted to shout out, I could do this later, but there's people that listen to this podcast that think we are too mean to Andre Drummond. Andre Drummond's fine. He's not the problem with this team. He's not currently preventing the Sixers from winning a championship.
He stinks.
And so I wanted to shout out, that was a really nice tip in overtime against the Wolves. Very impressive play. And he's had some nice moments. Unterberger wrote a whole article on the website about how he actually loves and admires Andre Drummond's passing, the gutsiness of his passing.
His terrible passing. I think we agree.
AU doesn't disagree that the passing is bad. I think he just reacts to it and in sort of with wonder and admiration of the balls it takes to make those horrible passes. And occasionally they work, but yeah.
By the way, I'm not mad at Andre Drummond for being Andre Drummond. I'm mad at Doc Rivers for making Daryl Morey sign him. Like, I don't want him on the team. That's all. I don't have a problem with him as a person or his. He is what he is. Like, you can't get mad at him for being who he is. That's what he is. Just don't want
you can make, you can get mad at him for making. He didn't make bad passes tonight. He was not the reason they lost tonight at all. He was totally fine tonight.
Sure. I don't disagree. That sounded like I was being dismissive. I wasn't. From Juan, this comes from our mailbag. Writes to RickySanchez@gmail.com. Remember to include one non-basketball question. Hi, guys. I'm a longtime Sixers fan from Uruguay. I discovered Writes Ricky Sanchez in the early process years thanks to a Facebook group I was signed in. Since then, I try to listen to every podcast even more in the last 2 years. You guys are great company, a way to laugh a little from this chaotic team that always does the impossible to make us suffer. Basketball question is, when are we going to get a veteran backup point guard? TJ is my dream for this because it burns my eyes watching Shake or Furk trying to be a point guard that can't handle the ball.
They both can handle the ball. Shake more than Korkmaz, but it's just they're not fast. It's just they can't get around.
They're not point guards. They're not point guards.
Yeah, I think Shake is certainly closer to one. But they're just too slow. Like the guys that would be fine. I really like all these players individually, but when you surround them with other slow players, it just like exposes their weakness. It's really frustrating. I would like the idea of a veteran backup point guard. I think I've dismissed for a really long time. Because like in the process era, it was like, just go get Ish Smith six times.
Kendall Marshall.
Like Brevin Knight or Earl Watson. Just anybody.
Larry Drew the third.
Yeah, but those are young unproven guys. They were saying like right now that the version
DJ
of that
Augustine.
Is DJ Augustine. It's exactly DJ Augustine. And he's bad. He would not help the Sixers win basketball games. So the idea of just getting anyone who has ever played the position of point guard in the NBA in like 2009, like that doesn't interest me. Like Ty Lawson wouldn't interest me.
Yeah.
But like
Ty Lawson, is he still alive even?
No, he's alive. He's not in the league. But like it's hard to find those kinds of players that would be available that would be helpful. Because you wouldn't want someone, as much as I love TJ, wouldn't want someone who is not shooting. We got plenty of those. So you want a point guard. You want like version 19 of Jeff fucking Teague and everybody, no one's ever happy with Jeff Teague. And so like, that's why I was, especially if you're trading anything of value for him, whether it's Isaiah Joe or Korkmaz or Niang, but like those kinds of players, you want it to be actually good. And so that's why it's like, who are you going to get? Like, there's just not that many. There's nobody out there that like would really help as a backup point guard.
By the way, right now, as much as I'd love to have TJ on the team, it's much funnier watching him vindictively try to obliterate the Sixers every time he plays them because he's mad because they didn't offer him a contract. I actually like that better. Non-basketball question from Juan. The non-basketball question is what every Writes Ricky Sanchez pod fan wants to know. Did CJ pass the NNN challenge? Of course, CJ was taking part in a November challenge.
Oh, right.
And yeah, now it's December 1st. So CJ did not.
He didn't. Oh, the sad head shake. The sad smirk and a sad shake of a head. And then he goes away.
Not master of his own domain, I guess. Juan says, sorry if I wrote something wrong in English. Greetings from Cerro Largo, Uruguay. And let's fucking go Sixers.
You did great, Juan. Sometimes I just look at a map.
Yeah.
In the writer's room. I'm like, what does this look like? What is this country? Should I go there? And I found myself looking at like Uruguay and Paraguay yesterday. I was like, what if I go there? So if I go to Uruguay, Juan, I'm coming.
That'd be great. This comes from Sharif. My basketball question, if you could have there be one rule change in the current NBA, what would it be? Expanding the three-point line, playoff layout, amount of games, yada, yada, yada.
Oh, well, obviously, let's say the take foul is taken care of because like a transition opportunity that just gets spoiled. Now this year, worse than ever, but like several times worse than ever. Guys are just running at other players to foul them before. Like Zach Lowe's talked about it a million times. Like it's the most obvious rule that needs to be changed in the world.
Yeah.
And the fucking suits at the NBA that like have to take months and months and years to like think about it, to like go in the lab and like just keep collecting paychecks and be like, we're the rules committee and we're learning and we're looking up things. It's just like, guys, fucking make a decision. It's not that serious. There's a problem, fix it. Like it's ridiculous. But I would also, I haven't been on that as long as some other people have been on that. I've been on the charge and how awful of a call it is so often and how it's not encouraging defense. Yeah. Like push-offs are push-offs. You call a charge on push-offs. You call an offensive foul on push-offs. But the idea that like you're begging guys to like, hey, just go stand in front of this person as they're running full speed and trying to make a play. And you can just, all you have to do is just like stand there and like throw your body into like a stump position so you can get plowed. Like what? That's not basketball. It isn't. It really isn't. And it's not just like a hustle thing that like, you're like, what a heady play. It's just like, it's not basketball. You want guys to like actually defend the rim. If you then have to like be a little bit less whistly at those calls because you're like, okay, we're going to eliminate the charge and we're going to allow you to actually like protect the rim more, then great. Then we can work with that. And there's a balance. But like so many times, so much defense is just like sliding under a guy, and especially on fucking passes, charge call on a pass. Like there's nothing worse in the world than a charge call on a pass. Nothing worse.
The block and charge thing. I'm 100. That's what I was going to say. So, Sharif is non-basketball question. Yes, you guessed it. We're going back to the toilet questions, by the way, our Apple podcast, 5-star review. We're at 2,974. The review from Peter Punch is, this podcast is half about the Sixers and half about butts. So here's the question from Sharif. All of the pooping discussions have got me thinking. This is actually, I do this for Abby, our artist. This is actually a two-part question. What is the most satisfying poop and what is the most dissatisfying poop? For example, I personally find the most satisfying poop to be... I didn't read this. I personally find the most satisfying poop to be where it is solid, 1 to 2 drops max. And when you go to wipe, there's nothing on the toilet paper. I think to myself, this can't be. I even do the extra double check wipe just to make sure I wasn't missing anything. There can't be a better one, right? Now for the most dissatisfying poop. This is where it gets interesting. Is it the explosive one that leaves you in pain and agony for minutes on end? Pretty popular answer, I'd assume. For me, it's when you have a stomach ache. You feel the sensation like you have to take a poop, but when you get to the toilet, your experience is accompanied by I can't read this anymore. Do you have a most satisfying and a most dissatisfying? This gets more and more and more graphic. Sharif's email? Do you have a most satisfying?
Anything firm is generally very satisfying. I've never been constipated in my life, not once, ever.
Wow.
I have it the other way.
All right.
But I also think I people have been reaching out to me. Like, I think we might need like a little break from bathroom. Poop talk. I feel like it's a tonnage thing, which you can make a poop joke about, but I'm not going to. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's similar to a lot of players on the Sixers roster. Poop talk is good in doses.
Hmm. I don't know if I agree. I'll think it over. What do we got? Let's do one more. Well, there's a nice story. You have a choice. Nice story about Abby or a question about Christmas lights.
I like both.
You got to pick one.
All right, Abby.
All right. This comes from Josh. Hey, Spike and Mike. I want to thank you both for all the hours of enjoyment listening to the pod. It's definitely my favorite. Look forward to each episode. By the way, thank you to everybody who posted the Spotify Wraps came out this year or came out today. You know, this is what you listen to the most. And we were on a bunch of people's podcast lists. So thank you.
A lot of guilty pleasure podcasts that people have that I would be judgmental of.
Mm. Well, so. You shouldn't be judgmental. If you enjoy it, you enjoy it.
That's right. Even That's if you're wrong.
Well, I've been a fan since the very beginning. I'm actually wearing my Embiid and Process for All shirt as I write this email. My reason is to let you know that Abby Huertas helped me with a longtime dream of mine come to fruition for my family. Thank you, Abby, and both of you for the addition by way of Writes to Ricky Sanchez. Attached is a children's storybook I wrote many years ago about my daughter, Kelsey, when she was a child. She is now 29 years old. I reached out to Abby for 4 illustrations that allowed me to put my story together in a book form. She was absolutely spectacular to work with, gracious as talented, and I thought you might like to know. My first granddaughter was born this year, so I was very motivated to get my little project done. By the way, the second picture attached is Kelsey on her wedding day this past October. Their dog, Carson, Joel Embiid, Lerman Natris, is in the picture too. He was part of the wedding. He's a proud owner of a big barker. Thank you for all the goodness you bring to the world around you. And I saw the book that he wrote for his daughter, which is very nice, that Abby illustrated for him. And it's very nice. Abby does commissions. Great for Christmas presents, by the way.
Hell yeah. Love Abby. Love Abby's art.
Yeah. The commissions are great. I've got one for Val. I got one for my friend Alex. I know Jason Lipschitz got one for his wife. So Abby, you can find her art on our website. She's on Twitter at Dig Rupert, DIGRUPERT, or same on Instagram. So, well, I don't even know what's next. Who do we play on Friday?
They got a tough stretch coming ahead.
Yeah.
Which feels like they were just coming out of one, but it really doesn't matter. They have the Hawks.
Yeah.
And then a bunch against the Hornets and Jazz and Warriors and Grizzlies and Heat and Nets. So, yeah, going to be bleak, but they just, you know, they looked shitty against Orlando and Minnesota and a pretty mediocre Boston team. So it's not the opponent. It's them. I will say slight thing to feel good about. Ime Udoka was pretty attractive as a Sixers assistant coach. Absolutely. Undeniably. He looks way uglier as a head coach.
Oh,
guy,
I didn't notice
he wears that stupid like pullover. It looks bad. His body shape is weird. He looks like way worse, like way, genuinely way worse. So I don't know what that means for the Sixers Celtics fortunes, but it's just something I noticed. And now I'm saying it on the podcast. Not as hot, less hot.
Okay. I don't think I even noticed him tonight.
You look.
I will. I'll go back. I have it DVR'd. I'll check it out. All right. That's all we got. We will talk to you this weekend. I don't know. Hopefully something happens. Good, bad, whatever. Maybe a tank. Be great. Sit and be the rest of the year. Goof off for a little bit. You know, I don't know. All right. We'll talk to you this weekend. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah, you know, look face.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.